Networking certifications are a favorite topic among our listeners, and today on the Packet Pushers podcast, we've got Jeremy Chara with us to talk about the Cisco Certified Network Professional tracks. I'm Ethan Banks, at EC Banks on Twitter, and if you're not familiar with the show, we are a weekly-ish independent podcast about computer networking, TCP/IP, data centers, routing, firewalls, network virtualization, all that sort of stuff. We've got multiple podcast feeds with all sorts of great content. To find it, head on up to iTunes and search for Packet Pushers or visit packetpushers.net. Those of us that host the show, as well as our frequent guests, are network architects and engineers with full-time day jobs that keep us plenty busy, but in our spare time, many of us blog, do some freelance writing, cover network industry events like Interop and Cisco Live, make unicorns cry, and so on. So if you want to contact the show, that is as easy as sending an email to packetpushers@gmail.com. To keep up with the blog and audio content the Packet Pushers community is generating, you can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers or subscribe to our RSS feeds published at packetpushers.net. And hey, we are glad that you have joined in the nerdery. And joining us today is one of the biggest networking nerds I know, Mr. Greg Farrell from the UK. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, I love the pumping up there. God, how can I live up to that? We've literally just recorded a virtual symposium with Cisco, and I'm actually still in shock over that. I've spent a lot of time prepping for that and researching a whole bunch of technologies that I probably wouldn't otherwise. That went quite well, I think.
It went well. I was quiet because there was just such great conversation going. It's like I didn't have a whole lot to add, but yeah, what he said. So what, between Ivan Pepelniak and Marko Milivojevic, and I think I almost got that right, and Omar Sultan and so on. Great conversation that we had in that virtual symposium regarding network virtualization. You know, researching this stuff, there's just great direction that a lot of this is going. And I think you made the comment, and I agree with it, that it'll be interesting to see how this affects SDN overall with a lot of the new tech that's coming out.
The point is that a lot of us, when our career choices, a lot of people have been writing to us and saying, if software-defined networking is going to take off, what does that mean for networking? And the answer is there's two types of software-defined networking is sort of like network management or network coordination or network operations. Mm. But the real challenge is down in the networking layer where today we do everything in hardware and we configure the hardware to do something. But there's a rising industry around doing software switching and software routing, and that's the change. That's the inflection point. And the question is, will customers buy software-based networking or will we buy hardware-based networking? And what I discovered, I thought everything was going to be software for a while, but then what I discovered as part of researching for this is that there are features coming in hardware networking that will replace that software stuff. That's what I learned, I think. Yeah. Is that a summary?
Yeah, I think that's a real fair summary, and particularly some of the space that, well, I mean, it was a Cisco virtual symposium, but the space they're playing in, the way they're doing the presentation of a virtual interface, both up to the guest OS and then down to the physical hardware, like a Nexus 5500 on the back end, is pretty cool stuff. And they're playing on both sides. It's software and it's hardware. So they're getting the performance and the flexibility of management. So, pretty cool stuff. Now, we got way off on a tangent there for a show that is really about Cisco certification and CCNP. And another guest, I think Scott McDermott is with us. And Scott, this is your first time on the show, is it not?
It is. I've listened to all of them.
Yeah. All of them.
All of them.
Better. Scott, tell folks where you blog, Twitter handle, any of that kind of stuff.
Tweet at ScottM32768, and I have a blog that I very occasionally post to at mostlynetworks.com, which generally turns into the, ooh, Cisco Live's going to be great. Oh, Cisco Live was great, and then rinse and repeat.
Yeah, those are the easy blog posts to write. The longer techie ones are just a pain in the butt, and they take a bunch of time. I just saw Brandon Carroll put a tweet out there like, I've got a blog post I've been working on for 2 weeks, and I just can't get it done. Yep, I feel his pain. Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on, Scott. And you just got your CCNP, yeah?
Yeah, I just finished it, finally.
Finally. So which track were you on?
Well, it was route and switch, and the switch was pretty easy. T-shoot was pretty easy, but my job is mostly focused on switching and troubleshooting, so I don't do a lot of working with the routing protocols. So I actually that required a lot of studying, especially since we run EIGRP and the test is kind of focused more on OSPF. So it was good to get in there and learn that stuff, but it was challenging, and I made some and at Cisco Live, I failed the route test the first time. So that was awesome. It was a good learning experience.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks for coming on board. And then, of course, who I mentioned right at the top of the podcast, Jeremy Char is with us. And Jeremy, why don't you tell everybody, in case they don't know who you are and how they can find you online?
I would blend right in with your introductions, which is just we are nerds by nature. I mean, let me back up. I looked at Greg Farrow time zone, and what time is it there, Greg?
It's 20 to 10 at night. Just about my bedtime.
22:10. See, in the United States, I don't even know what that means. So 10 o'clock at night. So yep. 10 o'clock at night, Greg is sitting there with a headset on saying, I want to talk about networking. So
what you don't know is that this is my second show today after an 8-hour work day.
Even better. So I thought what a great way to start my introduction, because I would also be sitting there at 10 o'clock at night with somebody saying, I want to talk about networking. So an introduction. How do I introduce? I would say an introduction for me would be I am a lifelong technology guy, to where I started long ago, where most people do, in the Microsoft and Windows world, and got into Novell back when Novell was more than a tiny blip on the radar like it is nowadays. Teaching people, I got into training, teaching people about system administration, and somewhere around 1999, just got bored, to where you can only create users so many times, assign them to a group so many times, and you go, okay, I got it. We're all networkers here, so I'm not dogging on system admins. I still do system administration, but around 2000, I hired on at a company called KnowledgeNet, which is no longer around. I said my goal here is I want to get into networking. I want to get into Cisco, and that if I hire on here, I want to be able to teach Cisco. So they said, sure, you're hired, do that. So I got into Cisco and never looked back, to where once I opened that can and I looked inside, I was like, this is amazing. It was starting over from scratch, learning from the ground up how things work. Where am I? Am I talking about an introduction? So yeah, this is an introduction, right? So that's where it all began. And 4 years later,
journeys always start at the beginning, don't they?
Something like that. Yeah. So 4 years later, 2003, 2004, got my CCIE in routing and switching. And it's just, from there, I now train for primarily a company called CBTNuggets.com, which that has spread worldwide through the beauty of the internet, and just, I would say, grassroots marketing, to where marketing or theft, one of the two. It's been amazing. I get people in China, Iraq. It's essentially just recorded video where it's not. Well, Scott, are you there?
I am here.
Have you ever seen CBT Nuggets?
I have not. I think I've seen like some clips on YouTube, but I've never like really used it.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's hard for me to describe because I do it all the time. But in a nutshell, CBT Nuggets is training at a grassroots level. As by time I got to CBT Nuggets, this is 2003-04 time frame. I thought, oh well, I'm fairly good at teaching people things, and I submitted a little demonstration video of my training to CBT Nuggets, and they said, we don't like it. It's junk. And it was the first. I mean, I took that hard. I was like, "Wow, really? I'm not good." They said, "This is not our style. Our style is you are hanging out with somebody talking about the coolest thing you ever saw, and that is a Cisco device." And they said, "Redo it, but talk to people like they're sitting right next to you, your friends. You're sharing a cup of coffee talking about networking, and I would say the rest is history. That company has blossomed into a full Cisco training suite, and so that's what I do a lot of. The difference of them is they are very low tech in their training. It's a whiteboard, it's live demonstrations, and it's just cool conversation. So I also write for Cisco Press, teach in front of classrooms at a company called Interface Technical Training, and have a family of hang on, I'm losing track. I just added one 10 days ago. So we are now at 4 kids, all under 5, and a very tired wife, and me. So there it is in a nutshell.
You said, I have a family of, and then you paused. I was going to say routers, a family of routers. Maybe it's a family of firewalls. I'm not sure.
We don't talk about that.
I was going to go with cats.
Well, Jeremy, I'm gonna keep you talking here. I mean, there's you wrote up some questions for us to talk about, and I think they're all great questions that are going to help folks looking at the CCNP program kind of make some decisions. But let's start right with the obvious one. Well, why get certified? What is the point?
And that's I get that question a lot. To where when I'm teaching a class, people. You know, I say, okay, well, how many people here in this class, you know, are studying for the certification exam? And I get, you know, a third, half of the class kind of raising their hands, and I immediately say, okay, right now, we're going at it. I'm going to have every single person raise their hand by the time it's said and done, because certification is a way of putting some accreditation to your name, and. With Cisco, they actually make the certification exams. I mean, I'm talking to the preaching to the choir here. You guys know, you're CCIEs. They make the certification exams real. It's not just, I read a book and clicked a couple buttons and passed the exam. When Scott did his intro, Scott, it was awesome to hear you say, you know, I got to route and I got my butt handed to me and someone, because I took that same exam. Now I've gone to the CCIE level, so I would say out of anything, routing is my passion. I love it. It's a blast. You know, it's just fun putting all the Lego pieces together of routing. So I went to go take the route exam when it came out. I'm like, this will be a piece of cake. I put my foot up on the computer, and I had this idea there. You know, do you guys know that every exam, every question has a comment button at the bottom of it?
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, you know, so I saw that comment button. I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be a piece of cake. I'm going to write a comment on every question, because I know that the people who write these exams probably get people like, I hate you, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I said, I'm going to take this exam with the mindset that every question I'm going to write a comment. And so I started saying, Cisco is great. I love this question. You know, oh, this is a really good question. No, so I'm about 12 questions. Writing comments on every single question, and I get my first simulation. I'm like, oh, this, you know, of course I pop the comment. I'm like, this is a great simulation, you know. And so, you know, 5 minutes goes by, 10 minutes go by, and I start to scratch my head. I'm going, holy cow, this is a real deal simulation. This is, I mean, it's a multi-path. You know, I could approach this different ways. You know, and it was implementing policy-based routing. Wait, no. Hypothetically speaking, on the exam, there could be a question. After that question, I got another – like 30 minutes goes by. Immediately, I'm like, oh, the thought crosses my mind, I'm failing this exam. I'm not going to finish in time. You know, the comments stop, all that kind of thing.
That's right.
So the exams, even at the CCIE level, going back to them, I'm going, wow, these are tough. So take that back to the original question. Why get certified? It, number one, proves that you know what you're doing. There are a million people out there that when you say, do you know how to work with Cisco? They go, oh, yeah, I got a Linksys at home. It has a Cisco logo. It's like, okay, well, what does that mean? So it adds that, but Cisco is one of the only ones in the industry that actually gives you an incentive to get certified. Meaning, I've got all the Microsoft MCSE from the days of old, and even the Novell CNE and all that kind of stuff. And every time you pass those major milestones, you get a certificate in the mail. They're like, congratulations. Uh-huh. And you get the little plastic card, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You can flash people if you get pulled over. Yeah. But it's kind of like, oh, congrats, you now can put those letters after your name and go find a job. But Cisco is the only one that actually incentivizes, if I can make up a word, a company to hire you. So they say, you know what, company XYZ, if you hire, you know, five CCNAs, a CCNP, and three CCI, you know, whatever, it's kind of like a cocktail of certified people, you move to this partner level and we will give you significant, huge discounts on Cisco equipment.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about going to work for a partner where this some kind of a VAR or an integrator is partnered with Cisco to sell Cisco products. And yeah, Cisco's got a really good reason to motivate those partners to hire good quality people that are going to do really well when they go on to a customer site and put Cisco products out into the world and make it work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's so lucrative at some point. There's a man who shall remain nameless that I still work with quite a bit, who works for a company 100 miles from here. He's a dual CCIE, but he doesn't actually work there. He has his – now, you're not – let me disclaim. You're not supposed to do this, but – he signed up saying I'm on their payroll, and the company gives him, you know, a moderate salary. I would say, you know, 20,000 a year or whatever, and full benefits. But they say, hey, you can do whatever you want. You know, we just want your CCIE credentials on our payroll, if you will. And it's so beneficial to them to have those that they're willing to pay a small little fee to get that. And I thought, man, what a great way to say, you know, wow, certifications are beneficial. And
yeah,
I know.
They're beneficial in that way. And then they're also beneficial to go back to what you were saying, Scott. It kind of forced you to learn some stuff you wouldn't have otherwise known. You're in an EIGRP shop, but you had to learn a lot of OSPF.
Well, we've got some vendors other than Cisco in our environment, so I would like to move to OSPF at some point anyway. So it was kind of in my game plan, and it just gave me extra incentive to actually go through and learn that anyway.
Yeah, mm-hmm. My experience with the CCIE program was much the same, where there were definitely elements of – I did the route switch track. There were certainly things in there that I wouldn't have forced myself to learn otherwise, but because they were on the blueprint, it's like, okay, I have to know these things. And so it's the certification and the benefits that come with it, as you've been saying. But then it's also – you end up as a better engineer when you're done that certification program, assuming you really put the effort in to learn that stuff and pass the tests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Multicast is my example for that. So the IP multicast that you learn in NP and IE, but I mean, how many of us actually use it in real life? We don't do it in anger. Very few people will do bidirectional PIM. Very, very, very few. But a customer, if you think about, if you're a hiring manager and you're at a bank and you want to know that somebody's actually got multicast experience, you've now got a massive pool of people you can draw on to at least know they've got core competencies. And there's also a secondary impact, which is if you've got some multicast skills, you'll know why you're not going to configure it in your network, because you know how hard it is to you know, like,
but it
you
looks can make so it to, easy.
Yeah,
and then you actually try to use it, and it's actually, like, why doesn't this work?
It's actually deceptively easy to deploy, but also if you actually do research it and understand how it works, you understand how fragile it is and how much care and feeding and design you need to take to make it work. And that to me is what certification brings you. You know, it's teaching you the things that you don't know. And I was talking to a guy this week, in fact, who was saying to me, you know, I want to do these things. And I said, the point of certification from my personal perspective is for you to go and learn the things that you don't know. Anybody can learn what's around them. So anybody can say, I have to do this tomorrow, and then go and force themselves to learn that or turn to a colleague and learn that. But there's all these gaps in your knowledge that you don't have. And certification takes you into those holes in your knowledge and shows you what you don't know that would otherwise have been a hole that you fall through, and all of a sudden you have a problem. The things you didn't know about redistributing OSPF or, you know, why you don't use podcasts, that to me is the key value of certification.
Now, Cisco's got on their certification pages a pyramid, and there's five layers in that pyramid. Back in the day, I think it was only three, and it seems to grow. So there's an entry level. There's the associate level, which would be like your CCNA. And then CCNP is the professional level, the middle of the tier. Then above that, you've got CCIE, the expert level, and then CCA, the architect level at the very, very top for those two people in the world that have that one. Anyway, the professional level is what we're focused on today. And there's a few different tracks and that you can take. Jeremy, why don't you walk us through the CCNP program? Who's it really targeted at, and how would you approach this if you're someone who's just getting into the certification game?
It's targeted at people who want the tattoo. I mean, you've got the people that dabble in networking, like the CCNAs. They're like, yeah, my main job is system admin. I'm a Windows guy, but I just wanted to know a little bit about networking, and that's great for CCNA. But when it's time to, you know, put that tattoo on your shoulder and say, I want to belong to Cisco. I want this to be my job. That's the CCNP, to where you are now committing not just to one exam, but multiple exams to really, really understand the topics that are there. So, I mean, these are people that, you know, work for service providers. These are people that work for large organizations that can afford to have a full-time Cisco person. That's, you know, that's their job. Is all they do is Cisco firewalls, or all they do is Cisco voice over IP. And Cisco has done a great job mapping their CCNP tracks to all of the different specialties that are out there: CCNP security, CCNP routing and switching. So you've got all these different specialties that you can dive into. My thought, and I'd love to hear your thoughts as well, is it's always great to go routing and switching first. You know, go for the core, just like you did, Scott. You know, get the CCNP route and switch under your belt, and then branch into the CCNP security, then branch into the CCNP voice. Just because, well, I'm like, that's the best way because that's what I did. But I felt after I walked out of there, you know, after I got my CCNP voice, thinking, you know what, I have so much more breadth of knowledge going into this, having, you know, that core CCNP. What do you guys think?
Well, Scott, you must have chosen to go the route switch direction with CCNP first for a reason.
It's what I knew best. It's what I work with the most. I was actually having this conversation at Cisco Live with Blake Crony and Tom Hollingsworth, and we were discussing how the RNS track, everything else builds on routing and switching. If you don't have routing and switching, you don't get wireless, you don't get voice. Mm. And security is not necessary if you don't have any connectivity. So the idea is that everything builds on that. So if the better understanding you have on this foundation, the better you can understand everything else, the better you can support everything else. So I will admit this wasn't necessarily the path that was of most interest to me, because we were doing the voice deployment right now, and I'd really like to dive into the voice stuff. But this is the foundation.
No, you don't. No, voice is horrible.
I knew that was going to come.
Voice is a fad. It'll be over in a little while.
You'll learn it, so that's what I'm going to do. It never hurts to learn new stuff.
But yeah.
The RNS stuff, it's the foundation, and everything else builds on that. And so I really felt like I needed to go get that foundation before I started branching out. It just seemed like that was really the right way to do it.
The metaphor I've used just recently was that CCNP is like learning English at high school. You can get through high school without learning English, but it's a whole lot better off if you do. All your other projects, you'll be able to write your physics and chemistry assignments better if you have good English. You'll be able to, you know, do well in your other courses and other areas of life if you have good English. And CCNP is like that. It's the core topic. You don't have to have it. You can go and be just a wireless nerd and learn IP the hard way. And when I say IP, I mean routing protocols and TCP/IP and all that sort of stuff. But it certainly is where everybody should start before they because it's a competency. It says that you're competent to stand in front of a console and do something.
Yeah, it sounds like we've all done about the same approach to certifications. I did CCNP first, and then back in the day it was CCSP. Now it's CCNP security, but I did the route switched path first, then added the security layer at that point. Then later I did, when I did CCA, I did route switch because that's where that was what my primary job responsibilities were, and so it just made sense to go down that track at that time when I went to that level. So, well, Jeremy, if someone's committed to the track, they're going to do CCNP, whether they've done Route Switcher or one of the other tracks, what is there a particular strategy that's worth following?
I would say that the strategy worth following is to really – and I, this is going to sound painfully, stupidly obvious, but it works. It's to really get it. And there's people that study for the exam, and I'll throw myself in this bucket, where a lot of times you're going, okay, what's going to be on the test? You pull up that exam objective list, and you see, for instance, let's go back to the multicast. You're like, oh, multicast, that's stupid. I don't want to learn multicast. You know, and so you're kind of like, oh, and you look at the pages, and you're like, I don't get it. What would they ask on the exam? So you start searching for, Googling what multicast is on the route exam, trying to get hints of what people are seeing on there, just so you can know it for the exam, click the C button, get the right answer and move on. Not a good way to approach the exam. But that's how a lot of people do, is they lay out the exam objectives. The way that I suggest, the strategy that I suggest, is to really get to know the topic and fall in love with it. I loved hearing Greg when he's like, voice is a fad. And I'm going to put you on the spot, Greg. Greg, are you a voice guy by any means?
No. I started doing voiceover IP in 1999, and I did my first IPTel installation in 2002, and I absolutely loathed it. It was the most buggy, problem-ridden, stressful, up in front of Matt. It just blew up. The product blows up in the middle of the day. When a telephone system goes down, people take it all too seriously. You can only work on it at night or on weekends. You don't have a social life if you're an IP telephony engineer. It's just not a technology that, you don't want to work on this stuff, because it's just – and even today, unified comms remains unreliable, hard to patch. It's full of software that barely works. You've got a clicky-clicky all day, and it's just not that interesting. It's kind of boring.
Thanks. Wonderful. So I want to convince them to go after voice, and here's why. No, but it's great to hear that, because that's exactly where I came from. I got into voice not in 1999, about 2001. That was in Call Manager 3.4. Ran on Windows NT. I mean, come on. And it was like, oh, there's a problem. Reboot. Fix it. That was great. I thought
that was
I left
4,000 line cards with transcoder DSPs.
Yep.
I go back to 3810s using ENM tip ring interfaces.
Mm-hmm. I have one of those sitting right here. not ENM. I've got some FXS, some FXO, but
No, I'm going right the way back, even further. Go back to 1996-97. when Cisco bought the company that looked like a 2500, but it had voice stuff in it.
Yep, that's it. Okay, here we go. So the voice world. When I got into, just like you, Greg, I was like, this is lame. And I made it the mental idea that I was forced into it. They said, hey, we need you to teach some voice classes. I was like, oh, voice sounds great. And I got into it. I'm like, this is lame. And my mantra started becoming, I don't want to make phones ring. My job is not to make phones ring. And I for about 3 years, I was like, voice is lame. I even got the certification and so on. And then something, I don't know what hit me. Something happened around 2005 or so, where I was having to learn the Nyquist theorem. Can we say lame? About how to convert it. The Nyquist theorem is, created by Harry Nyquist, the guy who said, this is how we turn voice into digital information. This is how we take sounds and make them ones and zeros. And so I'm reading a book about it, and I'm going, this is lame. I've got to learn this. I've got to explain this. And then something, probably about the time that you're in, Greg, around 11 o'clock at night or so, I looked at it and I was like, wait a sec. That makes sense. Wait a sec. Okay, so when I say the word cow, it's sampling at, 8,000, like this, all of the tech, it was, have you guys seen The Beautiful Mind? Who's that? The Russell Crowe?
Russell, yeah.
He's staring at the page, and you know, things are floating around. All of a sudden, he's like, "Oh, there's a conspiracy! They're going to kill the president!" Or, you know, so it was one of those things. I'm like, "Oh, I get it! I understand what Harry Nyquist was saying." And at that moment, I said, "That is pretty cool. That is a cool technology. I get it." And now that I get it, it makes sense to me, and it's cool. It's not just reboot the server and now it's working again, you know, because that's demotivating to anybody, is reboot the server. And that, now let's take this all back to the point with the study strategy. It's demotivating to anybody to say, oh, yeah, if you see that question, the answer is C. Just remember, you know, the third subnet is the one you want to pick. So you have somebody who's taken a certification exam. They go, oh, it's that one. C, next. I mean, you talk about a demotivated person. That is not a person who's going to be talking at 10 o'clock at night on a podcast program about how cool network is. That's a person who's going to get the certification and get hired somewhere, and they're like, yeah, I'm just here collecting my paycheck. I just want to go home. Do I have to work past 5 again? So I know this is a long answer to the short question, but the best way to study is when you really get it, when you really get, you know, Scott, OSPF, and you go, oh, that's why we have multi-areas and summarization and ABRs, and you put all the puzzle pieces together, then you can't stop. You can't stop knowing the stuff. You're like, I want to learn more. I reached the end of my book. Let me look on Cisco's website and scroll down and see what people are chatting about this. That's what makes you go write a hour long blog post that you just want to tell the world about multi-area OSPF and how great it is. You know what I mean?
There's one motivation that's, I want to get the certification because I think I'm going to make more money. And so all you care about is passing the cert because somehow you think that's your ticket to freedom. There's another kind of a person who does this because, as you were just describing, you just love it. You love networking. You know, I identify with what you were saying early on where, you know, I started out doing Windows stuff, Windows NT. I was a NT4 MCSE. But after a point, it is like you say, you can only create users and drop them in a group and assign that group to a file permission so many times before you go, yep, this was fun and all, but I'm ready to do something else now. And it, the passion and the fire for IT and technology was ignited for me when it was networking. And it's a lot easier to study for a certification when you love this stuff. And when you, even the stuff you're looking at, like multicast, keeps coming up as the example, and go, oh, I don't think I like this. If you just kind of make up your mind that it can do something pretty cool and interesting, and then it gets a whole lot easier to study for it. And mm-hmm. since we're picking on multicast, there's Chris Margaret, who's been on the show before, reignited my interest in multicast by telling me some of the interesting problems he had to solve in a trading floor environment dealing with multicast. It was fascinating just listening to him recount some war stories about it, and all of a sudden multicast got a lot more interesting. Some more recent conversations that I've had with folks around VXLAN. Well, multicast is a pretty important part of VXLAN as a protocol, and so you begin to think about, wow, I need to really wrap my brain around multicast because there may be some advanced technologies coming down the line that are going to depend on that. Well, let me ask a different question then. Now, CCNP, I'm actually right on Cisco's website looking right now to review the requirements for CCNP. First of all, you need to be a CCNA certified, so it's kind of an assumption you've done that there. And then there's three tests you got to pass. There's a route exam, there's a switch exam, and then there's a troubleshooting exam, T-shoot. And that, is that the path that you went down, Scott? Those three, you were CCNA first and then those three exams?
Yeah, I did CCNA and then I did switch because I felt like I knew that one the best. And then I did T-shoot because I decided I wasn't ready for route yet. Fortunately, I do that a lot at work, so that was a pretty straightforward test. And that's an awesome test. And then I finally did route, which I had to do twice.
Well, Scott, you having taken the three exams now, do you think it matters which order people do them in?
I don't know. If you don't have a job where you're used to troubleshooting, you probably need to do route and switch before you do the T-shoot. Otherwise, you're not going to even know where to begin to troubleshoot if you don't have any understanding of what's going on there. But I don't think it really makes much difference whether you choose to do route or switch first. It seems like most people, based on what I've seen on discussion boards and stuff, it sounds like most people do route first because they think it's easier. But I thought switch is really broad. It's not very deep, though, but there's a bazillion little technologies covered. That's what worked for me. But, choose the one that you know best and then go there.
Jeremy, do you guide your students in any particular way, route, switch, and T-shoot?
Yep. I tell them go route first, then switch, then T-shoot, because that's what I did. That's it. But just like Scott, if you do switch every day, I mean, I'm like, hey, you know, go get switch, because there's nothing more demotivating than going after your first exam and you get nailed. You come home, kick the dog. You're like, I hate Cisco. And it's just, you don't want that to happen. So if you know and love switching, then do switching first. Scott, did I hear you right? You didn't take T-shoot last?
No, I took T-shoot second.
Wow. I've never heard of somebody that did that. That's really interesting.
It was 2011 at Cisco Live, and I was going to go for route, and I took a practice test, and I knew I wasn't ready for it, and so I decided and then Cisco Press Twitter account said, here, have a free copy of T-shoot for book, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's a good sign. So I read the first couple chapters, and I'm like, I could do this, I know this stuff.
Yeah.
So then I went and I did a couple practice tests on that, and I'm like, yeah, I can do this, and I actually scored quite well.
Okay, so tell me honestly, did you walk out of the T-shoot exam, and when you were in the T-shoot exam, did you try to work the system? Did you try to – well, I'll be honest. That's what I did. I saw the first question. I was like, oh, wait, I bet you there's a pattern here I can find where, you kind of go down the trail of, I think the problem's here, and then – or did you just honestly approach the exam?
No, I approached it the same way I would approach the problems at work. I got through about – somebody out there has got this thing where they say, hey, try backing out and looking at another question, and you can look at the config there, and then you can go back to that other question because it's set up in like a bunch of trouble tickets, mm-hmm. and you can back out of a trouble ticket before you've actually finished it. But that didn't work at all for me. I was nervous, I guess. I don't know. And I went through about eight of them, and I'm like, I'm not getting any of these. I don't understand. And then I actually shifted into – so maybe I did try to work the test. But then
you did. That's exactly what I did. I thank you. I'm not the only one.
And I went through, and then it was easy after that. So it was a great test. It's very much like the real world. I really enjoyed that one. That's the most fun I've ever had in a Cisco exam.
Yeah.
I've only taken five of them, but one of them twice. The second time on route.
Now there's something you don't hear every day: fun and Cisco exam in the same sentence.
I'm telling you, Greg, go take the T-shoot exam, and you will have fun. It's you're sitting in the iOS trying to figure out what's broken, and you walk away. You're like, that was a fun. It's like when you're at work and you've been banging your head on something, and you finally figure it out, and you're like, that was awesome. It's like that just nine times in a row on T-shoot, where you just feel good.
I know. I was just working on the I was invited to help out on some preparing some labs for the Data Center Unified Fabric Troubleshooting course, and I discovered how hard it is to do those things. It is really, really difficult to write those questions.
Mm-hmm.
Super, super difficult to find a clever question and content and labs and really tough.
When you said clever, you want something that's going to reflect that people understand the topic well and maybe some nuances about it. So coming up with a question that's going to reflect all these things, that isn't just a rote, obvious question and answer is, it's not easy.
Yeah, yeah. So, we were talking about the order to take them in. I think, Scott, you just broke my paradigm, but I would say whatever one sounds really interesting to you. I mean... Guys, you totally feel my theme here. My theme is like, you got to do what inspires you to do it. And that's what when I teach classes, my goal is always inspiration first and then information second. I mean, you can find anything that you can find in a class online somewhere. I mean, you just Google, get mad Google skills and find it. But what's really going to spur people on is, I mean, having conversations like this. Like Scott walking away from T-shoot, he's like, that was great. I loved it. It was just neat, and that's taking it all the way back to, why get certified in the first place. There's I think two certified types of people. There's one who, like you said, Ethan, the one who does it for the money. They're like, I want those acronyms after my name so I can get a pay raise. And then there's one who just does it because it was really neat to do. And about 3 years ago, I started my own consulting company, which actually exploded into more of a IT management company, and it put me on the hiring role. And when I hire people, when I interview IT people, I mean, there's some who are, you know, there's some who are good at what they do, but you're like, I would want you to work in a closet. I want to be able to say, go fix the problem, but don't speak to me, because, you know, they're deadpan. They're like, so the subnet mask was wrong and I fixed it and it solved the problem. And then there's people that you're talking to, and they're talking about the same circumstance, and they're like, and then I pinged this and then it failed and then. Oh, I found the subnet mask was wrong, you know, and so you're like, I want that one, you know, he's on my team, because, I mean, that's the guy who it's, you know, 1 a.m. and he's still sitting in the data center just because he likes it there, you know, it's just, you know, he's so excited about the technology that he just wants to learn more, wants to try more. So,
well, this is actually a really good segue into another question I wanted to ask here on the podcast, which is, how do you take a certification you've earned and then turn it into a better job opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, enthusiasm, I think, is a big part of it. But I know, you know, the reason I asked that question is it came up in an email conversation I was having with a listener who, he's in more of an entry-level IT gig right now, and it's okay, but it's not really what he wants to be doing. And he is in a study group with some friends, and they're working on CCNP exams and really trying to turn this thing into a different job that's more like what they want to do, something cool like networking. So you know, what advice can we give someone like that who's working on CCNP in the hopes of turning that certification into a better job?
I would say at most organizations, now there are some organizations weighed down by bureaucracy and you haven't been here for 90 years, so you can't go to the next level or, you know, all those kind of things. But in most organizations, I think if you have somebody who's really motivated to go after it, they will. And these are the people that, you know, are talking, you know, so I'll grab a company that I've actually talked to a lot of their engineers, GoDaddy. Strange company, but they have kind of different tiers of engineers. They have all the people at the help desk, you know, that receive calls. I can't set up my email, and they walk somebody through setting up a POP3 or IMAP account or something like that. All the way to people who are in the data center and, you know, who are, you know, living, breathing networking all the time. And so I've taught a lot of people who are at that help desk level who want to go into the data center, and they have that same question. How do I get there? You know, let's say I get my certification and how do I get there? Well, some organizations, like, once you get the letters behind your name, it's like, there you go. You know, you're now promoted because you have those letters, and that's great. But if you're not with one of those companies, that's
every Indian outsourcing company in the world today.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
I didn't know that.
Well, if you work for an Indian outsourcing company that's got 100,000, 200,000 employees, how do you grade those employees and work out who's better than one or the other?
Yeah. Yep. That's good. So maybe, you know, there's instant promotion level one. But if you're not at one of those companies, I would say tag along. Like, you know, 5 o'clock hits and you hear the network guys, you know, hanging out in the break room, just, you know, kind of go in there and start conversation. And, you know, oh, you're doing a deployment tonight. Can I come? You know, don't be afraid to throw yourself out there. I'll run cable for you guys. I'll crimp some tips on the cable. Can I touch you? I mean, it's like, within boundaries, hang out with those people. And within a couple weeks of doing that, they're going to be like, hey, let's bring Bob along. Bob will run all the cable. I mean, they may manipulate it to where they're like, Bob's the cable guy, let's bring him along, you know. But by the time it's said and done, Bob is going to be getting some pretty hardcore experience and hanging out with the people who, the next time there's a position open, they're going to be like, get Bob. You know, we like Bob.
Jeremy, that is right on the money. There's those of us that have been around networking for a while are always looking for you know, the younger guys or girls that are coming into IT and think they dig networking. great. I want to work with that person. Yeah, maybe you're only on a help desk now, or you're a sysadmin, and you don't have a lot of responsibility per se. But if you're interested in networking and you got the spare cycles and you want to sit with me while I'm working on a network design project or implementing something and talk through what I'm doing and why, I'll give you all that time. But you got to show the interest. Otherwise, I won't have any idea that you're interested. If you are interested and you show the enthusiasm and you're willing to help out and spend some extra time beyond what your normal job responsibilities are so that you can start getting a handle on networking, that would be great. And Jeremy, like you were saying, yeah, when the job opportunity comes around, yeah, put Bob in there. He's been working on this with me off and on for the last 6 months, and he's pretty sharp and putting a lot of effort in on his own. And yeah, now that we got the position open, let's fill it with Bob. That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, don't be afraid to volunteer. I know volunteer is like, well, I'm not getting paid, but back to the whole theme of my conversation, well, I wouldn't do this for free, but I almost would. To where it's you gotta really get involved that way.
Yeah, I mean, people like us, we would much rather have somebody who wants to be around us. It's human nature, right? Mm-hmm. So if you take an interest in what someone else is doing, they're going to look at you positively. There's other things, of course. Don't smell and don't be a dick. But, but they're more practical issues.
Okay, so, Jeremy, you were talking a little bit earlier about the guy that you don't want to hear from. You just, I fixed it and it's better now. Okay, and there's also that guy that can fix stuff, but you don't want to work with him because he does smell. Hygiene is secondary on the list of character traits that he is cultivating at the workplace. And so you kind of throw that guy in the data center, shut the lights off, and chuck some raw hamburger in once in a while to keep the animal fed. So yeah. There are certainly those sorts of personalities out there. And if you can avoid being that person, I mean, it is honestly, sometimes it seems very difficult to find the person within IT that they just love to be so nerdy, and they capitalize on that aspect of their personality, that being normal and so on just isn't on the list, and they can be very difficult to work with. So if you can strike the balance between being a nerdy person and being someone who is fairly normal and you can walk down the sidewalk without people looking the other way, then that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And you gotta work at it. I mean, I become that person sometimes. I'll be sitting, you're in the midst of troubleshooting a router config, things are down, you're working from home, and your wife walks in behind you, is like, hey honey, you're like, don't speak to me, because you're so in the zone on getting the thing fixed. But I mean, you gotta come out of that zone.
So yeah, pretty interesting conversation we're having here around people and personality types. And yeah, we're kind of winding down the podcast here. Is there anything else maybe we should be adding to the conversation?
I have a standard speech that I give to young people who ask me about.
You know how old you sound now?
Yeah, I know. Did you hear me try and pull that back? Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Maybe you should edit that bit out. People say to me, like, I don't need a CCNP or I don't want to do a certification. So the first thing that people who don't want a certificate tells me is, A, that you're probably lazy or not motivated enough to do it. Now, that's fine. I have no problem with that. And I also understand that some people have learning difficulties, and it is difficult to learn how to learn, especially if you haven't done any study since you've been at school. But there's one thing that the CCNP – there's a few things that CCNP people who have passed tell me. One is you can read a textbook and learn, which tells me that you can read a manual and learn. So when I say to you, I want you to go and do this, and I say you're going to need to have read up on Cisco's website to do this, I know that you know how to read a website and learn something from that. That's important to me. I don't actually care if what you learn from your CCNP to some extent. I need to see proof that you read something and you learned something. The second thing is that CCNP is going to teach you a whole bunch of core competency knowledge that you will need to use every day. In the same way as a carpenter tradesman goes to college and learns some fundamental about his tools and then does 4 years of an apprenticeship, that means he knows which way is the right end of a hammer, and he knows how the right way to hold a saw to cut a piece of wood, and he knows some safety, health and safety, and some how to be nice to the people that are around him because he's probably had it beaten into him by the people he's been apprenticed to. CCNP is that equivalent for networking. If you've got CCNP, to me, you've finished your apprenticeship and you are now a journeyman. You are now approved to actually be allowed to work on a network, and that's what I want to see. I want to see people who pass their CCMP because I know that they should go and read a manual and they've actually got some core skills and competencies to be able to go and do some work. And the final thing is don't stop learning, because your CCMP today might be what you need, but in 12 months' time, you're going to have to start studying for your research. And 5 years later, if you haven't moved into some other area like security or MPLS or software-based networking or Cisco's UCS, you're going to have to learn something new. So it never stops. Work on it. Go and sit down and talk to your boss and say, I need time for more textbooks. I need access to resources. I need to go to conferences to learn and to stay up to date. Don't hesitate to go and ask for all those things. Here endeth the speech.
Greg reminded me of something. I tend to hang out with a lot of people who don't think certifications are important. And for me, it doesn't get me a raise. It doesn't really, you know, it might potentially open doors in the future if I leave. But I've been at my current position for like 16 years. And I knew our environment really well. I thought I knew networking pretty well. And then I got the opportunity to shift from being a jack-of-all-trades sysadmin who did a little networking, a little this, a little that, creating the user accounts, making the home directories. The opportunity came to focus on networking. So I went and I did that, and I decided that, I'll look at this CCNA thing. I'm going to go to Cisco Live this year anyway. So, you know, as long as they're giving a free exam, I should do that. And what I discovered in that process is, it's kind of like something we talked about earlier, you learn the things that you don't actually know you don't know. Going through that process was really valuable just from the standpoint of, oh, I'm filling in a bazillion gaps and realizing how many things I have done wrong. Yes, I had experience. I've been running a variety of routers for a long time, and the network worked. Did it work as well as it could? Well, now I know it doesn't. But you don't learn those things unless you pursue it. So even if you don't want to pursue the certification for whatever reason, at least read the books and get some knowledge, fill in those gaps so that you can actually be better at your job. You've got to learn something. If you sit still in IT, you're not going to be useful in a couple of years. So that's my speech.
Yeah, that's a good place to wrap it up, I think. And Scott, why don't you tell us what you're going to be working on this week at work? I'm kind of curious.
My service provider is converting their ancient ATM network to a metro optical Ethernet network, and so I'm working on the documenting the cutover procedures for switching from the ATM network to the we're calling it the Mo network, for trying to figure out with our various pieces of equipment what the best way to do that without actually blowing up the network in the process is. So I'm just documenting those procedures.
Aha, that sounds like fun. Now I'm curious, you've done your CCNP. Are you eyeballing CCIE?
I have had conversations with people that have made me reconsider, but right now I'm looking at going broad because I at least want to work on some of the CCNA concentrations just to get to fill in the blanks on some of that stuff before I decide to go. I'm actually thinking what I might do is once I fill in a few of the CCNA gaps, I might actually go down the CCIE wireless track.
Oh, that'd be interesting. And Jeremy Chara, thank you very much for taking the time. You are a difficult man to schedule, sir. Your calendar seems to be very full. And what's the week hold for you?
This week is everything CBT Nuggets. I'm actually working on a series on the cloud through Amazon AWS, which is totally outside of my norm, but totally mind-bending, to where you create disposable servers in the cloud. It's weird, but I'm recording a series right now on how to use AWS and integrate it in your organization.
Now, you're a busy guy, so I don't think you do a whole lot of social media stuff, but by any chance, Twitter or blogging, anything like that where folks could follow you?
I'm quasi anti social media. I know that's like saying I don't like dogs in America, but like, you know, I think it's a fad. The only thing I do, I have no Facebook, I have no Twitter, I have nothing other than a blog. Actually, I know we're at the end, but a flyby story. It used to be called ciscoblog.com until Cisco, after I had that for seven years, Cisco took it from me.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, give me some love on that. So they said,
we feel terrible, Jeremy. That is awful.
They took it from me because somebody had a domain, ciscomemory.com, and they were selling gray market memory, and Cisco said, you can't do that. And he said, well, he's doing it, and so they took it from me. So anyway, that blog now became a blog called TechCert that I co-blog with a guy, Adam, who is amazing. He actually was the one who told me about your program in the first place. And so I post there once in a blue moon.
Well, that is great. Thank you very much for joining us. And hopefully we'll get you back sometime. Open invitation, and we'll see if we can get you on the microphone another round sometime in the future. And Greg, sir, what are you going to be working on this week?
This week is all about Cisco UCS FlexPod and Citrix VDI on VMware. Private cloud, end-to-end. I am neck-deep in it, and it's quite interesting, except for when it's really, really boring. So, yes, you can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com and on the Twitter as at etherealmind. I'm going to be quiet for a while. I've got to post an article about my cabling, my follow-up on my practical cabling. So by the time you hear this, you should go and see it. It's actually quite an interesting article put together with a cabling friend of mine, the top 20 things about practical cabling, which has been pretty popular, I must say.
Yeah, those practical articles usually are. And for me, I am making great progress on my Nexus 5500 and FEX install. I'm going to be turning up some VPCs and connecting the new Nexus to the legacy network, and then starting to work on shifting the bits over, if you will, so that the new stuff is beginning to move the traffic around instead of the old stuff. So that's what'll keep me busy. And hey, all of you that are listening, thank you very much for listening. We mean that. You can trust us. We're not like the others. Now, if you liked what you heard, please tell your coworkers, your Twitter followers, your Facebook friends, your LinkedIn contacts, and random people in crowded places about the Packet Pushers podcast. Don't forget that PacketPushers.net is home to a community of bloggers that write nerdy networking stuff so you can learn from or be amused by, so stop by to see what's going on. And hey, let us know if you'd like to blog with us by sending an email to packetpushers@gmail.com. We have a lot more podcasts coming, a lot of stuff in the hopper, content that's being planned, so we hope you subscribe to the show. Thanks for letting us take up some of your valuable bandwidth, and remember that too much networking would never be enough.